This is Critical Nonsense, our high-lowbrow show about culture, science, and tech. This week, Aaron asks Joey about how becoming a parent changes everything. And Joey asks Aaron about comparing ourselves to everything.
Woo! I'm going first. This is what an Aaron sounds like. Ha!
Oh!
Whoa!
I know, I'm blowing it up.
He came
in.
I'm
blowing it up.
He came sharp.
I did.
This is what a Joey sounds like. And this is what a bearded lizard parent and executive producer, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess. Bearded lizard, no real beard?
I don't think so. I think it's just like...
It's a metaphor for
Do lizards
lives.
Have hair?
Wow.
I don't
think so.
They would have maybe feathers.
I would see them as a feathered creature. I don't know.
But I don't think they have either.
No.
If we have any listeners that are lizardologists...
Oh, yes.
Please let us know. If lizards have hair.
We need to know, and we need you to be our next special guest.
Yeah.
Lizardologist.
Yeah.
Email us.
We need to have a conversation about lizards.
This is critical. What's happening?
Can we just do one real quick bit of housekeeping?
Yeah, I guess.
WeWork is still seeming to implode, and that's a thing that seems to have gotten worse, and it feels hard not to just be like, hey, yep. Things that got worse. You should read some more articles about it because it's a thing.
Also, a note related to our last episode on sports and an amazing write-in from Mudge, who has been on our show before. He shared this incredible fan. How would you describe it?
Indie game?
Yeah, indie game. Like and combines two amazing things to make a sequel. NBA Jam, no, Space Jam.
Charles Barkley, Shut Up and Jam.
Yes, yes.
And Space Jam.
And Space Jam into its own video game.
Yeah, all of this came out of our conversation about the all-time dunk contest that we were talking about in our last episode, which
yes.
was kind of random because we were mostly just talking about ethical travel and work friends, but somehow we got onto the topic of dunking and basket sports. Anyway,
basket sports.
This game.
Are there any others?
This game. We'll put a link to it in our show notes. But just the Wikipedia article is so spectacular.
It's truly, truly incredible.
You just gotta read.
The plot summary of this game is: it is a dystopian future in which Charles Barkley has an atomic dunk.
Yeah, I think it was like a chaos dunk.
Dunk. Mm-hmm. That's what it was, and kills everyone at a basketball court with his chaos dunk, and so then basketball is outlawed by Michael Jordan.
Yes.
An evil cabal. But then when another chaos dunk goes off, Charles Barkley, who's taken to the sewers, needs to save the world and save basketball.
But the joke's on all of us because we are living in the simulation. That's the real world. I'm just letting you guys know.
Yeah.
It's not part of the game, but that's just the way it actually is.
Yeah, and don't forget Bionic Vince Carter, who forgot the past and you think he's good, but just kidding, he works for Michael Jordan. Bionic Vince Carter.
Sports.
Okay, so I have one other quick note before
we get into
the thing. Just for all those Mortal Kombat fans who love talking about it on this podcast, they released the character footage for Terminator in the DLC for the game. DLC is the downloadable content pack, which is coming out, and it's literally Arnold Schwarzenegger as voiced by Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator, and it's incredible.
Wow.
It's real cool.
Did you faint?
I did. Me and...
And you oop?
Can you oop?
I think it's only self-referential, right? Mm.
I mean, I don't know. Let's ask Jasmine Masters if you want to come on the podcast.
Jasmine Masters, we will gladly have you in here.
Seeking both Jasmine Masters and lizardologists.
Immediately.
Critical Nonsense.
Yes. Yes.
That is all.
The first thing that the lizardologist is going to talk about is that's not what they're called.
Exactly. Like, I have a real job title that I spent a lot of money getting my education and years in. My education and years. That sentence messed up. But that's a great transition to
topics.
To clarify, we know that it's herpetologist. That's fine. Okay, Aaron, what are we talking about?
You didn't know at the moment.
I just needed to check.
Dictionary helped you out.
Just to be really certain. Okay,
Webster knew.
Stop
yes,
it, Aaron.
Yes. So,
topics.
We're in topics.
Doppler effect.
I love Dopplering. That was a weird thing to say. Anyway. On the topic of transitions. So a lot of folks here at the office know, but I got a new puppy a couple weeks ago.
Yay!
And he's very sweet. Rufio Cooper McFly. That's not awesome.
A nerdy name. At all.
McFly from Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. Cooper from Making Barrels?
It's a mixture of The Street That I Grew Up On and also Anderson Cooper. Let's be honest.
Silver Fox. And like, then Rufio. Yeah.
From Hook. Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah. Okay.
So now Rufio.
We're working on Bangarang being a cue, but we've got to be smart about what that's for.
Yep.
So,
he lost his marbles. Yeah, he lost some good.
Oh, God. If you haven't seen Hook, it is still worth a rewatch. Yep. It's a great movie.
Actually holds up.
Yeah, and fantastic for new parents, which is kind of what's going on in our house right now. Like, we brought home Rufio. I've never had a dog before, in my entire life. Branch has had, a dog growing up, and so he's been used to him. But this is his first dog as an adult on his own.
As an adult.
And everything, in the words of Will Smith, has gotten turned flipped upside down.
Because parents just don't understand.
Precisely. Yep. And we truly don't. We are looking at Rufio like, yo, what do you want? Like, you're doing things and you can't talk. And
are
we
you
can't
super
talk.
High while this is happening?
Like, basically.
What's in your mind?
There is going to be a comment about CBD, and I will explain that very shortly. But all of this has made me, and Jess has been my, like, other therapist during the workday about how much of a change this has been. And my kind of open question is, how do we manage changes in life state?
I like life state versus life stage.
Yeah. I mean, I like it too. I think that historically,
you're just like coining things and just being like,
I mean, like, no one's
kind of an originator and like an icon.
I am what they call a creator.
When you say it like that, it sounds more important.
It's very, I do think it's an important like distinction in language, because I think historically we think about progress through life as stages, as like, you know, high school, college, work, marry, kid, retire, die, basically. Yeah. Like,
well, I think about progress through life as being dragged.
Kicking and screaming. Yeah,
by my ear.
Yeah, it's like, wait.
By time.
And I think that, like, that is the reason why I think it's not a useful metaphor, but really just thinking about how life changes state. Like, if you think about liquid, gas, and solid, like, that's kind of how things are changing in life. It's you go from one state to a totally different state that has different rules, different speeds of, oh, Jess is getting
like
really excited about this.
You can just skip around. Yes. So are you saying that there's dog state?
There, oh my God. I didn't know that there was a dog state.
It's called The Isle of Dogs. It was a film by
Wes Anderson. Yes, Wes Anderson Cooper, which would be a really good mashup. That should have been, no, that couldn't have been Rufio's other name, because Wes Anderson would be involved, but I'll save my hatred for Wes Anderson for another episode. Sorry, guys. Hot take. I know.
Not here nor there. Dog state.
Yes. So the dog state is something that I and we as a couple have never experienced before. And it is truly something that I don't think I could have prepared for in any way, shape, or form. And it has had a seismic impact on me in the past 2 weeks. The idea of not being able to communicate with a being that's there, creating a relationship and communication with this little guy, wanting to care and have the best life for him. I have ordered every toy on Amazon, and most of them, it's gotten to the point where if I open a package on the kitchen table, he comes bolting over to the kitchen table. Like, it's that bad. Oh, no. He knows that
dude,
packages
means toys.
Dude,
you've had this dog like 1 week.
It's true. But I think that I've been managing through this, trying to exert as much control as possible, and like control over me, right?
That's shocking.
Yeah, no one would ever expect me to be like, let me just go into control freak mode, because I can make it work if I just control everything. And that has been, a little bit, it's not been a great, it's a way to transition or to manage that transition.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, is this, as you're hearing this, Joey, does this sound anything like new parent or like new dad state to baby?
Well, I think it is similar in why I like the term life state versus life stage, because the idea is fundamentally like you're introducing a new set of conditions to your situation, your environment, your person, whatever it is. And then the question becomes, how do you reach equilibrium within the new state, right? Like those conditions could go, right? Like for whatever reason, if dog state didn't take, you could, I would have a harder time getting rid of my child, I suppose. The contractual and legal obligations are greater.
I would say so, yeah.
But the idea of that you're in a new state, there is a new set of conditions, and that you need to find sort of equilibrium and homeostasis within the new state is compelling to me, because it sort of highlights our own like flexibility and plasticity and ability to adjust to new conditions and like be happy and live within those new conditions. But it also is sort of implies that you have to change. You can't just be like, your life now that you've entered dog state is not going to be identical. And so it, you know, how are you going? Like when you think about it that way, it puts you in kind of a nice power position, although it might not feel like it when you have a new puppy at home, of saying like, I'm still in control of creating the new conditions that I'm going to like build an equilibrium on. Like I can set the new routine. I can set the new way that this system is going to run, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. I think.
I'm just wondering also though about like when you say that the agency that you have, it part of it is like how long do you have that agency? Because like dog state is kind of irreversible, right? You decide you want to get a dog or you're going to be, or you decide you want to be a new parent to a baby, and it's like, okay, well, you made your choice now.
Yeah.
Like you can't go back. You can't like go before dog, like, you know.
Yeah.
BDS. Before dog state.
Well, I mean, there is like the nice part. Like, I mean, you could give your child up for adoption. That is still, I suppose, an out.
Yeah.
Although that is not in the cards for me. I'm not looking into that possibility. But the idea that like you are forever altered also is sort of interesting in the way that like, you know, like you're probably going to go through like an interesting exercise in your expansion of your empathy by having to understand sort of the emotional state of an animal that can't talk to you. And regardless of how everything else goes, you would probably keep that in theory, I would think, right?
Yeah. And I think like almost taking a step back, there are some transitions. I think this is sort of what you were getting at, Jess, too. Like there are some changes in life state that we have a lot more control over making the change, right? Like if we take a new job or something like that.
Move.
All those things are things that we are controlling, and therefore there's a different relationship with the change. But it's when, less when you've, you know, elected to do it or not, but more so the expectations that you have around what the current and new state are going to be.
Yeah.
And how aligned they are or misaligned they are is where I think things get, where the management of those changes becomes really important.
Yeah, we need some dog stories now with expectations versus reality.
Okay, so here's an example. Come home with Rufio, and he is, let's see, we've had him for like 4 hours, 5 hours. He immediately goes to pee on the wee pad, and we're just like, what? Oh my God, what? and then we go outside a little while later. We stay outside for like an hour and he does not go. He will not even sniff. Well, no, he's sniffing the ground like crazy because he just wants to smell everything. And then we go back inside and the second we close the door, right over to the wee pad goes. And it's like, okay, so wait. Oh, this is what people talk about when they say that you're going to go outside all the time, no matter the weather, you're going to go inside, outside. And specifically during house training, you're just going to be going out over and over again, hoping and waiting. And there's nothing you can do but give him treats when he does the right thing. Mm-hmm. But what happens when he never does the right thing? And that's not so much expectations to reality. That's kind of just telling a story. A better expectation to reality. Because this is, I've got doggy brain.
Did you just yarn a weave?
I might have just yarned a weave. I thought And I was not completely prepared for the first night to have him yelping, barking, howling, just going crazy in his crate. And I was prepared. I had earplugs. I had my sleep mask. Like, there's a lot of things that they told us to do to teach him to bark it out. You're not in trouble. We're not abandoning you. You're fine. He has not made a peep any night that he's been home. He has slept completely through. And that's why I think he is, like, potentially, famous last words, like, the best dog for someone who's never had a dog before. The sleep deprivation is the hardest, but we're not having to deal with that. What we're having to deal with is the communication, the playing, the don't chew on the couch, don't chew on your poof. That's going to be your poof now. Don't mess it up. Like, a lot of it actually has gone in the other direction of the things that I thought were going to be hard weren't. And the things that I didn't think about are monumentally difficult to comprehend.
Yeah, that's like the big thing that comes to my mind is sort of like the cascade effects of any change, right? And like, you can have sort of some expectations around if you've moved in the past, you know, like, okay, like, where do my friends live? Am I like near trains where my friends live if you live in a city with public transit? Or, you know, like, where's my job, you know? Is there a place where I can get coffee or you know, Chinese food or pizza near the place that I'm moving? But like, you can kind of play out the scenarios that you want to expect. But when you change something that you haven't experienced before, like the cascade and carry-on effects that you just aren't anticipating are sort of interesting, right? Like the idea of oh, we can go out for like a Saturday, but if we are leaving in the morning and going to hang out with friends, we still need to go back home to let him out before we go out to dinner or something in the evening, right? Like that scenario is sort of one off. So you have a harder time of being able to anticipate like the shifts and changes that will come down the line.
Or even if you do think, you know, it crosses your mind, you don't have to be a fool to realize like, yeah, well, okay, you have a dog. So what's going to happen if you leave for a long time? Like it makes a lot of sense that you would need to take care of those things. It might be really hard to internalize the effect that that'll have on your life as it is in this new life state, dog state, until it's happening. And you're like, wow, it's happening. Okay, this is different. And I'm trying to get used to it.
You know, Dan Gilbert over at Harvard in his book,
Gilbert,
great. Sorry. Okay. I just got the face from Jess of, dude, really?
What is that?
It is a movie.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yeah. It's with Johnny Depp. And no, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, both. Of them.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, in Dan Gilbert's book, Stumbling on Happiness, he talks a lot about the best predictor of happiness. If you're talking about transitioning from one thing to another, is to talk to somebody who has as close to an experience as your own so that you have your expectations managed. Mm-hmm. And that's the best predictor that a change or a choice that you make will result in a certain outcome that you expect. But it's important that you sort of apply as many of your same conditions to that other person that you're trying to get that input from. And it reminds me that a lot of times in managing transition, for example, moving, spending some time in your new neighborhood and walking around, like doing your commute on the weekend before you have to go to the new job so that you can see how far away the like parking lot is from the office or the train is from, like, all those things, if you get any sort of dry runs, can at least illuminate things that you couldn't have anticipated, which for some people can help calm some anxieties.
Again, this is why I feel like I'm being dragged through life, because I don't do any of that type of thing ever.
Sounds right.
I'm just like, I'm here.
And
that sounds true to Joey.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, also it's like, reading books on things. I'm so curious about this with actual parenting. By the way, I totally understand and believe that raising a dog is not the same as raising a child. I feel like I have to say
that.
I'm glad that you said that.
Yes, they're not
because equivalent. Of, you know, someone could have came in your mentions.
Yes. And right now it's just puppy fishes, so you gotta be nice.
But like, good luck.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's really nice. That was really nice.
Well, just on that earnest kind note, we should just shut it down.
We should. I had a thought and I can't remember it. And I'm sorry because it's...
We're done now.
All right, we're done. Okay. Next time. Okay, bye-bye.
Shut it down. Aaron, you got a campfire last time.
Yes, I
when,
did.
When
it was
you
very crackly.
Yarned a weave. Mm-hmm. And
step into your weave yarn.
I just like a beach sound for
is
this.
That a seagull?
The lapping of the waves.
Oh, I think I saw Flipper.
Is that
That's
Steven
what that was.
Seagal?
Oh, Steven Seagal the seagull? Yeah.
This brings me to my topic.
Yes.
I want to talk about ASMR.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't.
Oh, okay, good.
We can at some point. No, this beach sounds that you're hearing bring me to the question of comparison.
Mm. Mm.
Aaron.
Yeah?
Are my beach photos as good as your beach photos?
I don't know, dog.
How's my gram page?
Are your ears symmetrical to mine?
I've just been thinking a lot about comparison, and I've heard a few psychologists talking recently in a couple different places, like different podcasts, and I've seen an article, and then, you know, getting sort of anecdotes in from, you know, social media and things like that has just brought me back into this subject of, you know, the pitfalls of comparing ourselves to mm-hmm. other people. Mm-hmm. And the way that it's come up has been in both sort of professional contexts, as well as personal contexts. And a lot of the things that I heard these psychologists talk about weren't new. They're things that I think have been around, but they're sort of, I think, probably bringing the subjects up as sort of a reminder that these are like important things that we should be considering in the way that our sort of society is structured now with so much digital media and content and all of these things. But it just feels like it's not leading to a lot of great outcomes when you're sort of comparing yourself to others. And I think it even comes up in the subject that you were talking mm-hmm. about a little bit before mm-hmm. of like, am I being a good dog dad? How are other people being dog dads? You know, like, are other people's dogs as good as mine? Mm-hmm. Is mine worse? Is it cute? Is it not? Will people, you know, and so I want to know, why do we compare ourselves to others? And is there anything good that can come of it?
It is true that we as social creatures look for cues and feedback that what we're doing is right
mm-hmm.
and is good. And I think that feedback can come through inanimate objects, can come through food, it can come through all sorts of other reward. You can tell that I've been reading books about training dogs as a result of this.
It's really about operant conditioning.
Exactly. But I think we also look for signposts. Like, I think that we look for cues from the outside to at least just say, I recognize that I'm stumbling through life and figuring everything out. But I also recognize that there are social norms that tell me, great, I get a degree for passing through school. Or at work, I get a raise because I do hard work.
Yeah.
And although it feels natural to look for those cues for people around us, who's hotter than me, who's like richer than me, all that sort of things, they are things that it does feel like those things are not the only way that we can find and mark signposts.
Yeah, I think there's sort of an interesting thing that you're saying in there of when you're trying to learn how to do something, looking for comparisons could be valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I am entering into something that I have no idea how to do, or maybe I haven't been doing this thing correctly and I need to understand how to do it better. Like, that can be a really positive thing. When you're looking at comparisons to other people as sort of an evaluative standard of measuring your own value against someone else's value, I think that's where it really starts to kind of hit this like different thing. And a lot of that has to do with expectations potentially, right? Of like, mm-hmm. what are your expectations for your own life, which are never accurate.
True.
Like, at no point are like, you know, there's like one person somewhere who's like, this is the expectation I set for myself, and I hit every single note on the check mark or on the punch list. Like, but like for the rest of us, like maybe you get like 20% of the things that you're mm-hmm. expecting in your life, and the rest are sort of different, and maybe not like wildly different, but it's never what we expect. But that idea of sort of setting expectations and weighing ourselves against other people is sort of like, I just can't see the situations in which it's positive, unless for some reason, like, that sort of motivation of, like, self-flagellation is something that can drive you. I guess, like, you know, it takes all types. Maybe there are people that is sort of effective, but it seems like it just leads to sort of negative self-talk.
Is that necessarily true? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know that it's necessarily true.
To me, comparison is about, it is a, it can be a type of affirmation, like you were talking about, Aaron, where there are plenty of other types of affirmation that you don't need to have when you're being compared against anything. It's just like, you are doing well, so here is some kind of reward for that, whether it's just words or a thing, versus what I think you're talking about, Joey, which is like, I need to, the idea of like, I need to compare myself to someone else in order to get that affirmation. And I don't think that's the only reason that we compare ourselves. I think like having a benchmark is also just a useful way of being like, okay, where am I? Like what, in some kind of, like you were saying, if I'm learning something new, I need to know how I'm doing in order to know how much farther I need to go, or even sometimes to motivate somebody to keep working harder at something, right? Like if you don't know where you should be, or even if you don't have any kind of baseline to know how to break away from that thing. Like I think about, you know, like getting trained in music, for mm-hmm. example, like mm-hmm. there's like the very classical path of being trained a certain way. And there's a right way and a wrong way. And that right way is what you're being compared against as you're like getting classically trained in piano or something, mm-hmm. right? You can judge how you're doing based on what like the standard is and comparing yourself to that standard. But certainly that isn't the only way to practice music, but it could be. And for many people, it's a great way to begin so that later on when you go and find your own style, you know what rules you're breaking.
Nina Simone. Sorry, that's like my favorite example. Nina Simone being classically trained. And then you can hear it in all of her like breaks in different jazz songs. But like Love Me or Leave Me, in the middle of it, she's got this great classical like moment. And it just like makes the hairs on my arm stand up.
Yeah. Or you take a look at Picasso and you see, if you go to a Picasso museum, the one in Barcelona is spectacular. If you go to the Picasso Museum in Barcelona, the thing that was most incredible to me was seeing how in the early years of his work, like everyone knows Picasso for like cubism and like, you know, like his very noticeable style and obviously an incredibly prolific artist. But all of the works that he made at the very beginning were like so standard, just like mm-hmm. high technical ability, that then when you later see his cubist works, you're like, oh my God, I now know that like not only do you know what you're doing, but you're purposefully and actively breaking those rules. And I know that because I can compare yourself even to your current or future work.
I think the issue here, like, because I agree with the sentiment that you're bringing up about sort of establishing standards of excellence to push past it. I think like this continually happens even in athletics, right? Like, you know, no one thought you could break a 4-minute mile and no one did it forever. Mm-hmm. And then someone did it. And then all of a sudden a lot of people started doing it. And I think that sort of concept of establishing a standard of excellence that sort of you can agree with is excellent is distinct from comparing yourself to, you know, it would be like Picasso comparing himself to Dali, mm-hmm. right? And saying, well, like, I'm not Dali, so therefore I'm not as valuable. And so I think there, like, for Picasso to have broken away from the standards, you almost expect that he had to have seen himself as sort of distinct and being able to approach things in his own way versus, you know, going online. I think, like, in the social context, it is, you know, like, what's the comparative set that you're putting yourself against, right? Like, if you go on Instagram and you follow a lot of models or whatever, or people who are older, have more money than you, then you're inherently going to say, like, I am not in your class, therefore I am less valuable, which starts to create negative self-talk, versus saying, like, you were only following like strategists on Instagram mm-hmm. of your sort of same like age cohort and whatever, mm-hmm. and then sort of comparing yourself. Like at least at that point, it becomes sort of like a little bit more of an apples to apples thing where you could say like, how could I be better? But when you're, or, you know, like in a, for me to just go on like LinkedIn or Medium mm-hmm. or something like that, if I were just to start comparing myself to anyone, the people who pop out to the top are the ones that are doing really well. It would be different for me to sort of compare myself to like my cohort at grad school, which was mm-hmm. like people who are sort of in a similar environment. And I could say like, how am I doing? Like I could like check in on that.
Well, and that's where I think it's actually, there's two, it's not so much to me comparison, but it is a mechanism of order and then valuating the elements that are within that order or within that framework. Mm-hmm. Cause like we like, and this is my one semester of trying to be a neuroscientist compared to your entire educational career. But like, we are hardwired to try to organize things, like yeah. to say like this thing and this thing are the same. Therefore I read them a certain way, and to make those associations, we're just, and I think that a lot of times when we're in this conversation talking about comparison, the first thing we're talking about is an organizing principle for ourselves and others, depending on the context. And then there's the next stage, which is ascribing a meaning or value to, and a worth to different things within that.
Yeah.
And that seems to be where we go wrong, where like so many cues can wrap up in there and can make the value that we ascribe like to what is beautiful to then saying, I'm not that beautiful.
Yeah. The side effect is basically we get the implications wrong and we start thinking, oh, if that's, I now see this. And so that establishes in this case, you know, my organizing principle of like, this is what normal looks like. Mm-hmm. And now the implications for me are that I'm not normal or, mm-hmm. you know, like I don't fit in or whatever. And I think that it might just be that we're bad at that translation part, mm-hmm. right? Like we can look, we can compare and all those things are good. We can set a standard of excellence and we're like, oh, so these people are great. Okay. These people are normal. Cool. I'm neither of those things. So what should I do?
I'm not cool or normal. Yeah.
And I think that it's important that like, it's not a personal failure that happens. Like those implications are conditioned by culture and society.
Yeah.
Like I just keep on thinking about the beauty one. And it's like when we ascribe Eastern European beauty standards to what is considered beautiful and culture reinforces those things, mm-hmm. then the comparative statement that we have, the negative self-talk that happens is incredibly deeply rooted and reinforced by just like the air we breathe.
Yeah.
And it's really like, it's fuel for pain.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes through. I think it comes through in a lot of things as well, where you're not giving yourself the time to establish your own basis for what you believe in. And so you both start to go through a comparative model with people that maybe aren't in your cohort or are truly exceptional, right? Like the at the end of the day, like the Sheryl Sandberg book, which is, I know, sort of like Lean In, like has pros and cons to it, or like positive and negative responses. She is truly an exceptional individual. Mm-hmm. And she is saying like, you basically need to do it all. And that was one of the key critiques, is like, you are exceptional and you should like not like go around like patting yourself on the back maybe, but also like have the awareness to understand that all women are not as sort of brilliant and motivated and capable and all of those things that you are. Mm-hmm. Like you're in a class with like Oprah and you know, maybe
okay.
no, she's not.
Let's, sorry.
Not that
yeah,
far, but,
no.
but she's closer. She's down. Closer yeah. to Oprah no. than the average woman, right? In terms of like capability and motivation and whatever.
The key to me is that like that sense of self variable that when lost, you can draw incorrect implications, right? Like if you take the standard for what it is and you say, I'm not that, without knowing who you are, then you don't like, it's not, you need both a sense of excellence, a sense of the norm, and a sense of self. And if you don't have those three things, or especially if you don't have the sense of self, then you will miscalculate what mm-hmm. that means for you and what that yeah. says about you.
I yeah. love that. The implications part and like being able to say, I need to behave a certain way. I need to look a certain, whatever. Like once you draw that implication, it has to be something that we interrogate. It has mm-hmm. to be something that you like take a look at and you're like, okay, I've drawn this implication that that's what it is. Is that true? And I think that that second beat is a way to make comparison something that is healthy and that allows you to have like idols, you know, yeah. and that's where yes. that comes from. So,
yeah. yeah. So what are your idols? Oprah?
Oprah.
Apparently not.
Oh yeah. my God. Whoopee.
Can I just make one last note that I've just realized? I know we did the recap and I'm ruining it, but I just had like okay. a realization. When we started the company, there were not a lot of models for the type of company that we are. And I think it was like a really interesting example of, I didn't feel like I had someone to compare us to. So I was sort of freed from that burden. And it's sort of an interesting take to sort of evaluate like your uniqueness for the ability to just not be able to compare yourself to someone else.
The implication you derive is the value that you want to deliver. Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, that
this
was
is a
cool.
silent eye roll.
Yeah,
that's for like, me.
Sigh roll. That doesn't really work, does it? Silo roll.
Stigol. Critical Nonsense is a Sylvan Labs Vacation production.
Recorded in beautiful New York, New York, in MacGyver Studios.
As always, we'd like to thank executive producer and professional beach volleyballer,
that's
Jess
me.
Vander.
That's me, Jess.
Also flying Steven Seagal enthusiast, Alex Gontel.
And as always, we want to thank designer Nora Mestrich for our cover art and for Sandcastles in the Sand.
Epic Sandcastle.
Yes, and we also want to thank three recently dyed white dreadlocks of Whoopi ASMR. Goldberg. Production help that came from Zara Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vaughn. Thank you.
And as always, thanks, Alen.
Thank you.
SMR.
Yes. I'd like to thank.
I'm really proud of that.
Alen SMR.
I'm really proud of that calming.
That was really
beachy
impressive.
Credits.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to thank
We're
the beach.
Innovating.
We're innovating the beach. I really want to thank the beach. I didn't go enough this summer. I'm coming back to you, beach. It's okay. We'll see you next year.
See you again.
Yes.
Hey, Sometimes Fire soon. Island, I see you.
I see you. I see you. I'd like to thank Puerto Vallarta. Because it's Puerto Vallarta and it's amazing. And it's got good beaches.
Yeah. I'd like to thank my daughter for saying Dada now.
No way.
I won the race.
Wait, what? Yeah. How yes. did we not talk about this earlier?
Oh, my God.
Emerson.
That's
sweet.
So cute.
I won the race. Becky's not happy about it.
Wait, that is cruel and sad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. That's empathy. Yeah. I'd like to thank Jess's empathy for always being present at the moment that it needs to be.
I think she still likes her better, but, you know, phonemes, D's yeah. are easier than M's, kind
it's fair.
Of, maybe.
I want to thank phonemes. No, I want to thank Rufio Cooper McFly. You know, because you're around and you're challenging me in the right ways, and I love you.
Good boy. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to thank Dog State.
Yeah.
Dog State.
Yeah. I keep on thinking of that as like a deep state
yeah,
dog
was
state.
Too.
I was thinking like Garden State. Like a dog version of Garden State.
I was just thinking of like, you know, like the old dogs playing poker rugs.
Yeah.
I was just thinking like dogs as bureaucrats.
Yes.
Like
yes.
A big brutalist building like wearing like bad ill-fitting suits and like having like a calculator on their desk.
It's very, I see them in Chernobyl being like, what just happened? Yeah. What are we doing? We're not going outside. No, send them in.
Woof.
Woof. That got dark. I'm sorry. I'd like to thank the MTV miniseries Chernobyl because I know it's like 6 months late, but that was really good.
MTV?
Really insightful. Did I say MTV? I said HBO. Did I say?
You said MTV.
I'm sorry.
It would have been a very different show if they had done it. No one was wearing yeah. shirts.
It was Eric Nies presents Chernobyl.
It was on a beach for some reason
Still
instead of in
We're
the
really
Ukraine.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. That was just 20, 30 years ago. Yeah, that's all I got though.
I would just like to thank the fall. The autumn.
The autumn. The autumn season. Ooh, I'd like to thank apple picking and pumpkins, not pumpkin spice. I'm not doing it this year.
I'm definitely having it this year.
Boo.
Also, yeah, you know, this is, I would say, proper fall time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I'd like to thank this conversation for sparking my topic for next week.
Ooh.
Oh, sneak preview?
Nano. NaNoWriMo.
NaNoWriMo?
Yeah.
Oh.
I like the mysticism. Okay, we gotta go. This is, it's time.
Okay, we gotta go.
Okay, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, bye. Yeah, yeah,
down by the beach.
Yes.